House to come to order. Next bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 3. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Joint Resolution 3 from Representative Stepson, a joint resolution petitioning Congress to call a convention to propose amendments to the Constitution of the United States to require a balanced federal budget be enacted by the state of Wyoming.
There are amendments. We will take them in reverse order. So the first amendment for our consideration is third reading amendment number 2. Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to move third reading amendment number 2 to House Joint Resolution 3 and ask for its favorable consideration. This is a simple amendment. Basically, where I'm coming from is there's those of us who are like me who are in favor of the concept of having a balanced budget amendment on the Constitution, but are a bit leery about calling an Article 5 convention. And almost every amendment that has been added to the Constitution has been done through the traditional route where Congress proposes it, votes on it, passes it, and sends it to the states for ratification. And what this amendment does is crosses out the part about calling for an Article 5 convention and just requests that Congress will put forth that amendment in a traditional fashion and send it to the states to ratify. So if you're like me and you want to support a balanced budget amendment but you're a bit leery about the process, I just present this as an alternative.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment and the simple amendment, and I appreciate the bringing it. It's interesting, though, that the sponsor of this amendment calls his route the traditional route, when the route that I propose is equally based in the Constitution and is just as old and just as traditional. I do appreciate the amendment being brought because I think it really serves to portray why we need to move forward with the resolution as written. And I just ask you all to sort of think through, if you adopt this amendment and we end up with a resolution that simply asks Congress to pass a balanced budget amendment, what will be the result? Will anything look any different a year from now? And we all know that it won't. We all know that we send off these resolutions all the time, and they have no appreciable impact on the conduct of Congress. And I would submit to you that would be the exact same result if we pass this amendment to this resolution. I think it's interesting, and this gives me a little bit more time to talk about what the real impact of passing the joint resolution as written would be. And we mentioned it a little bit in Committee of the Whole, but this would change the entire calculus of how the nation works in many respects, because it would be the first time that the states have utilized their constitutional power and have two-thirds have gathered together and said, no, we want change and we as states want to rein in the federal government and provide some boundaries for the federal government's conduct. Again, if you pass the amendment, what we're doing is we're relying upon Congress to do what they have steadfastly refused to do for 225 years. And why is that going to change? So certainly you can be opposed to the resolution. I would urge you to, even if you're opposed, vote this down and vote against the resolution. But don't adopt this with any sort of assumption that it will have any impact or change anything. Urge your no vote on the amendment.
Anyone else for the first time? Oh, Representative Winters, please.
Hello there, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much. And I agree with the words of the previous speaker. I ask for your no vote on this particular amendment. And just to point something out, there have been over 400 such resolutions over the last couple hundred years asking for Congress to do several things. And just to remind you, there are two ways of utilizing Article 5. One is through the method that's been used 31 times, 27 of which have been ratified by the various states. The other one is the one that we're speaking of here in this bill today. And Article 5's convention is the tool that is given to states to check federal power. It is not controlled by Congress. And when you look at the history of what has been designed there, let me just go through it just a little bit. And I'm going to speak a little bit extra on this particular topic because I want to lay a few fears to rest. Mr. Speaker, is it appropriate to speak of our founding fathers by their names, or do I need to find some other mechanism to speak toward that?
You need to find another mechanism.
Yes, sir. The man known as the founder of the father of our Constitution, from that state where our first president was from, our third president. Thank you very much. He spoke toward this particular amendment quite a lot. In an early version of Article 5, it gave Congress the power to propose amendments whenever two-thirds of both houses deemed it necessary. It also gave Congress the power when two-thirds of the state legislatures applied. And at first, that sounds very similar, but there was a key difference, and there was a reason why one of the delegates from the state with the very large city in it objected to that, because it was Congress who would be doing the proposing. And he thought the plan, this was taken right from the diary of that third president, he thought that the plan of amending the Constitution exceptional and dangerous, as the proposing of amendments is in both modes to depend in the first immediately and in the second ultimately on Congress. No amendments of the proper kind would ever be obtained by the people if the government should become oppressive, as he very believed would be the case. And it's because of his speaking that we came to the current version of Article 5. And Article 5 was very carefully designed in this way, and it was addressed also by the first Secretary of the Treasury of our country, who's currently on the $10 bill. But he made this statement in Federalist 85. He said, "But every amendment to the Constitution, if once established, would be a single proposition and might be brought forward singly." And he's pointing out the fact that amendments to the Constitution are single subject amendments. Secondly, he says later on in the same Federalist paper, he said, "But the fifth article of the plan, the Congress would be obliged on application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the states, which at present amount to nine, to call a convention for proposing amendments which shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the Constitution when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the states or by conventions in three-fourths thereof." And he says this, "The words of this article are peremptory. The Congress shall call a convention. Nothing in this particular is left to the discretion of that body." He says later, "We may safely rely on the disposition of the state legislatures to erect barriers against the encroachments of national authority." And the reason why I speak to that in regards to this particular amendment is because it is an attempt to cut out this particular avenue for the states to, as was mentioned by the previous speaker, to change the calculus of power in our country. And I believe that this is an avenue that must be explored for the good of the country. And so it is for that reason, Mr. Speaker, I speak against this particular amendment.
Representative Kirkbride, for your first time. First time for second time? Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time prior to the sponsor? Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I agree. I'm not trying to imply that calling an Article 5 Constitution is unconstitutional. I know it's a tool that's there, but the fact of the matter is one has never been called, so we don't know what the results would be. We don't know if there is an element of it that that could get out of control or we don't like. So, like I said, I wanted to present this as a as an alternative. Vote your conscience. I'll call for the question.
We're voting on third reading amendment number 2 to House Joint Resolution 3. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 2 has failed. We're now on third reading amendment number 1 to House Joint Resolution 3. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I bring you Third Amendment reading number one for House Joint Resolution 3, and at the appropriate time I will set aside the amendment. The Articles of Confederation was our first constitution. The delegates were instructed to only amend the Articles of Confederation. All 13 states were to agree if there was going to be any changes in the Articles of Confederation. The conventions changed the number to 9, and they went into a closed session. From changing the number of states that had to agree to 9, they were changing what their charge was to go to have a constitutional convention. When they made the change to that, the delegates went into a closed session. They came out with the constitution that we have today, the second constitution. They threw away the Articles of Confederation, which they were not supposed to do. And in doing so, when they did that, they had forsaken their oaths. There were some of those that held by their oath and went back to their home state and did not stay there to vote on it. Now, the people that were at this convention of states that they had were our founding fathers of the Constitution that we know today. Those that were at that were some of the most brilliant minds I think history has ever known. They gave us a document that I hold to me that would be only second to the Bible that God has given us. They were a wise set of folks that came out of a repressive government that had a king over it that was a very repressive king. And they gave us the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that we have today. There is no other government that has ever had the opportunities that Wyoming has, or the United States has in the history of the world. The opportunities that have been afforded us because of the freedoms that are guaranteed us are more than any state or any nation in the world has ever been given. We have men that have stood up and given us the greatest document in the world, like I said, outside of the Bible. There is many countries that would have liked to emulate it, starting with Russia for a few months before Russia took over, the communists took over in Russia. They tried to emulate it. The Philippines tried to emulate it with theirs, but none of them were successful. The people of the world love the United States. They believe that we are their protectors. They come to this country in droves. The people that come as immigrants to this country are not held into their countries, or I should say they're held into their country sometimes with barbed wires and fences. In this country, you're free to come and go as you choose. You don't have to ask permission to leave. With the Constitution being amended, we open up the cause for the Constitution that we have and hold so dear to be eliminated. Some would call this fear-mongering. I would not call it fear-mongering. We have a Constitution that is the greatest document in the world. There is nothing that's wrong with the Constitution that we have. The problem is those that are in Congress will not adhere to what we have as a Constitution. They choose to go around it by not obeying the Constitution that we have. I hope that you will vote against the H.J. 103, 03. Thank you.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment and in favor of the bill. And I agree with much of what the last speaker said, and I share his appreciation for and devotion to our Constitution. But one thing I don't share is the focus on the past. And the whole discussion was about the past. I think what's more important is the future, because what is at stake is the future, not only our future, but our children's future and frankly, our grandchildren's future. Because what we have is a national debt that will serve as handcuffs for generations to come, that will serve as an anchor on the economy for anchors to come, for decades to come, unless we do something about it. And so the question then becomes, how is doing nothing, is voting against this resolution calculated to do anything about that, what is really a national tragedy? And it doesn't. And there's been lots of discussions. I know you've all received phone calls, as have I, and emails about the uncertainties. And the uncertainty about what does this ultimate proposed amendment look like? There's questions about how do you control the budget? What impact does that have on the states? And there is. There's a lot of uncertainty. And that's why, it's the process of going through, of debating an amendment, of getting an amendment that three-quarters of the states can agree to, and then having it ratified. But I think even more important about than that uncertainty is, what is the certainty? And the certainty is, if we do nothing, if we do not pass this resolution, if we do not join the other 28 states that have done so and invite the other six that we need to get a constitutional convention, we know what the result will be. It will be the same irresponsible spending that we see decade after decade. It will be the same non-responsiveness that we see from Congress when we make repeated calls for a balanced budget and are ignored. So the certainty is, if we sit here and we vote no, nothing will happen. So I would challenge you to step beyond fears, step beyond uncertainty, take a leap of courage and avail ourselves of the solution that our founding fathers gave us in that document. The Constitution is an amazing document, but it's not perfect. We've changed it. We've changed it over and over again. And the founding fathers knew that there would be changes that made sense, and they gave us the authority to do it, and they gave us as states the authority to set parameters around the federal government. And I think it's time and long time that since we should have done that. So I would just ask for you to vote no on the amendment, support the bill, and let's take this courageous step forward.
Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I also want to express my approval and commendation of those who have expressed their fears on this, because I believe that what they're expressing comes from an obvious love of the Constitution. And I share that same love. And so I want you to know that right off the bat. I appreciate what I'm hearing. But I want to just speak to a couple other things, too. I understood the statement that was given by the bringer of the amendment, that the Constitution is not the problem. And I would agree. The Constitution is not the problem. It is the various interpretations of the Constitution that have arisen over time. In 1824, when the Commerce Clause was dramatically rewritten in the highest federal court in the land case, it's fundamentally changed the future of the country. In 1937, when there was another case that fundamentally rewrote the General Welfare Clause of the Constitution by that same court, it fundamentally changed the Constitution of the United States. And so what has happened is that there have been court rulings that have changed, I believe, core beliefs that were written years ago. And so this is where amendments can come along to clarify the original meaning of those phrases through constitutional amendments. And that's exactly what we're speaking of right now. That's what this bill gives us the opportunity to do. And We've discussed the whole idea of a runaway convention and all of those different things, and I heard that also by the speaker. But just to point a few things out, when you look backwards at what occurred there in Philadelphia, you can understand that this was done completely outside the scope of the then Congress operating under the previous document. The then Congress did, after seven states had already given their approval to work together to work on the Articles of Confederation, those seven states had already submitted delegates to meet at the place that the city that now holds Independence Hall in 1787. And so they were already meeting for those purposes. And then finally, the Federal Congress sent a letter of approval for what was done, and they did speak toward the Articles of Confederation. And so, but to believe that Congress at that time had given them a limited scope and that they exceeded the scope of what they were called to do is not actually factual from the perspective of history. And that's one of the things I also want to point out, that we have to be very conscious of that. I've also heard a number of individuals speak toward the subject of nullification. And I'll tell you this, I am no lawyer, and there have been many, many people who have spoken for, at this point, over 200 years on this particular subject. And we have to understand that there are different sides of this whole nullification issue. For instance, one of the methods is refusing to accept any federal funds and preserve freedom from invasive federal regulations that are tied to those funds. And I don't disagree with that. There are also countless other abuses of federal power that have crept in through the years, like national debt, federal agencies spying on U.S. citizens through cell phones and email, or unilateral decisions of an executive branch to take our nation to war, or other different things, or how they control land in Western states. All of these things have crept up through the years. And so when people speak of the idea of nullification, basing it out of the 10th Amendment, let me just remind you that the 10th Amendment establishes a principle. It doesn't establish a remedy, a process in this particular case. A person actually, by pleading that particular methodology, has to also read the entire 10th Amendment, which says the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So if we were to follow the principle of nullification strictly out of the 10th Amendment and just read the 10th Amendment straightly, the people or people, individuals, could nullify how they would choose to interpret the Constitution. So you have to understand what the 10th Amendment is telling us is that there is a principle established, but not necessarily a remedy or process. And the question would be, why? Why is it not established in the 10th? Because it's established in Article 5. This is the method that states use to push back against federal encroachment. And so I want to point these different issues out, and I would most certainly ask for you to vote against this particular amendment to this bill and for the bill as an entirety.
Representative Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think one of the most interesting aspects of the petition is something that we're forgetting about, and that this petition process has been used throughout our history to force Congress into action, specifically the 17th Amendment, the 21st Amendment, the 22nd Amendment, the 25th Amendment. All of those amendments are tied directly to the petition process, and states almost closing the door on reaching that magic number of 34. Congress doesn't want to give up their power. Congress doesn't want to tip over and say, holy cow, somebody else can make decisions. They don't want to do that. And so that's why, in those instances, they have tipped over and done what the people were asking. So if Congress isn't doing what the people have asked them to do, it's our job as a state legislature to demand that they do those things and to demand that they actually take action. And it has worked before in our history. Sure, we've never gone to a convention of states, which, by the way, is actual what Article 5 is, a convention of the states. It's not a constitutional convention. It's not a con-con. That's not anywhere in our Constitution. It's a convention of states. So it has been used before. It's been used effectively, and I ask you to vote against this amendment and in favor of the bill for the simple purpose that it is proven to work. Thank you.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bringer of this resolution, who spoke just a moment ago, hit on the nut of the problem, and that is the spending that is going on in our federal government. However, in this proposed resolution, spending is not addressed. The only thing that's required is balance. There's nothing that would restrain spending, therefore restraining the revenues needed to meet the spending, and that would require the balance. There are much better ideas out there than this balanced budget amendment resolution. For example, allowing the government to borrow when the business cycle is down during a recession, but then mandating that the debt be repaid when the business cycle springs back up again. So, yes, there is a spending problem. This resolution does nothing to cure the spending problem that we have in this country. It only requires balance. And if our central federal government is going to continue spending, it follows like day follows night that revenues are going to need to be increased drastically to the tune of 50 cents of every dollar that's being spent in Washington, in our capital. Aye on the amendment and no on the resolution.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Jennings.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the former speaker. I think that's something to really be thought of. For me, the real question, and I probably most of you know I've supported this in the past. Last year we passed something very similar. But for me, the word is integrity. And as I look at this question, when we passed this similar thing last year, it went to a different body, and they chose to disregard how it was brought about from this body. And so I see that as a lack of integrity to the actual intent. And so as I look at that and I think about things like the former speaker talking about raising spending to or raising income to match whatever we want to spend, it becomes for me a question of integrity. And we could address these issues if we had some integrity. And so I just see this as it would add a tool, but there's tools there right now. It's the lack of integrity that seems to be the problem. So I'm in favor of the amendment against the bill.
Anyone else for the first time? Representative Yagi.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Appreciate this conversation. We kind of had this good conversation on this last night, and the bringer of this resolution is pretty certain that there's no chance of something happening that we don't want to. I wish I felt that same concern. Let me read you a couple things. While the Constitution is silent on the mechanics of Article 5 Convention, Congress has traditionally laid claim to the broad responsibilities in connection with a convention, including, number one, receiving, judging, and recording state applications, establishing procedures to summon a convention, setting the amount of time allotted to its deliberations, determining the number and selection of process for its delegates, and setting internal convention procedures, including formula, all allocations and votes of the states, and arranging the formal transmission of any proposed amendments to the state. So I think Congress does have a little bit to say with this. And as we send our delegates, we will decide the delegates that go there. And supposedly it's just a one-theme purpose of, that we're going there. And the theme, of course, is we're spending too much money. But as just pointed out, the Constitution gives Congress the power of the purse. And Article 1, Section 8 lists the responsibilities the states ceded to the Congress. And Congress is supposed to spend only money for those things that are mentioned. All other areas are reserved to the states and to the people through the 10th Amendment that has been mentioned. Yet the federal government has formed layers of bureaucracy it has no authority over and spends money on items outside its jurisdiction. So I think the idea of bringing this to stop the federal government from spending is a good idea, but I think there's some things that need to be considered. I would say, is this the right political climate to be opening up a constitutional convention? I'm a little scared of what's going on, and I'm not sure convening this right now is something in that climate. Let's get it settled a little bit, see where we are before we get into this. So, because I'm a little concerned, I appreciate we need to do something, but I'm not sure doing something without some good, well thought through procedures is something we need to do. So I would encourage us to deny this. Thank you.
Representative Blackburn.
Mr. Speaker, friends of the House, I think we all fear this to some extent, but I think we, through the years, have said, well, we'll do something. We send people to Congress, and they said they'll do something, and nothing ever gets done. So when do we make a stand? Do we make a stand now, or do my grandkids and great-grandkids make that stand? I'd rather do it myself. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time before the sponsor? Representative Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate all of the comments that I've heard this far and respect those individuals as they have brought them. And let me just to tackle a couple things here. And I heard someone mention something about a single subject question, and I ran into a really fancy word, and I think that those whose profession is that of in the law would be able to speak at length on this particular subject, but it's a Latin term called ultra vires, and it speaks toward people speaking beyond the subject, beyond the question that has been brought. And in that particular case, they've made it very clear in an Article 5 Convention for Proposing Amendments that amendment, once it's been brought by 34 different states, if someone attempts to bring something that is outside the scope or beyond the scope of that particular amendment, that it is actually at that point considered invalid. And so you have to understand about this subject of the single subject question. I've already read to you from the statement in Federalist 85 where that is exactly what one of the founders spoke of in trying to disseminate information about what had happened at the Constitutional Convention. In the Federalist Papers, he made it clear that these were single subjects, and then later on in the next sentence he uses the word singly. And so let me just say that right there, that single subject question, I believe is historically, and I think also through jurisprudence, would be considered maybe a fear too far. Secondly, the question of the role of Congress. Let me just give you a couple reports that I've been able to take a look at. In this particular case, that federal legislative body actually had their version of LSO take a look at this, and they did submit some things, and of course they were looking at it strictly from a congressional perspective. And they brought out a few things. Congress is obligated to call a convention for proposing amendments if 34 states apply. It's one of the things they said, frankly. The founders included in this process as a way for states to bypass Congress in getting needed amendments passed. The process is an alternative to federal deadlock on an issue. Congress has no authority to veto amendments proposed at an Article 5 convention. And thirdly, the federal executive plays no role in that process. That is by their own studies. Congress does have has no control over the convention for proposing amendments. And so when you take a look at that, I appreciate the fears that have been stated, but you look at their role. They have the opportunity to set the time and place of the convention. Lastly, they have the ability, once that convention for proposing amendments has concluded, they have the opportunity for saying whether they will be submitted to the respective state legislatures or whether they will be submitted to conventions within the various states. That second alternative has only been used once, and that was on the repeal of prohibition. But both of those have been used already in time past. So you have to understand the limited scope, the limited powers of Congress. And again, going back toward that original Articles of Confederation, Constitutional Convention, you can see that they understood those limitations to their power in that particular case as well. And so I appreciate what has been stated, but I also believe that history and just reading clearly through Article 5 will answer those particular fears. And so again, against this particular amendment and for the bill.
Anyone else for the second time before the sponsor? Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To answer some of the questions, it does take 34 states to make a call for a constitutional convention. Congress shall make that call once the 34 states have come forward asking for a convention. The delegates that are at the convention set the rules for what is going to take place at the convention, just as they did in the first constitutional convention that we had on the Articles of Confederation. They had their limits that they had that they were supposed to abide by, and that was just to amend the Articles of Confederation. They went over and above what their charge was. They changed the rules of the amending process to where it was supposed to be all 13 states that had to agree. They lowered it to 9. There is, with this, the Article Confederation being set aside and thrown out, there is precedence for what was going to happen in the next convention that we had. James Madison said that he feared what would happen if we ever had a second one. And I definitely agree with him on that. The states, after they make the call for the convention, they are to set who they have as delegates. The Congress has the opportunity, after that happens, on who they're going to have or how many they're going to have. On some of them, they say there's only going to be one per state, but Congress can change that according to the Electoral College, where those states have a larger number, would have a bigger representation than we do. We do not know the outcome that would come out of this. It is an uncertainty. All we know is after that call for a constitutional convention is placed, that there will be a constitutional convention. And there is no going back. There is no being able to change your mind and say, I wished I hadn't. Whenever the call for the Constitutional Convention and the convention starts, they still have the possibility to do as the Articles of Confederation convention happen. They can close their doors and they don't have to tell anybody what happened in that convention. It would be secret. So the states putting a noose around the neck of their representatives would be taken away at that time. So we have no certainty that we would be able to put any limits on them. As far as the future that we have, one of the speakers before me said that we need to look to the future, and I agree, but you can always look to the past. Those who will not, I can't remember the exact quote, but those that don't pay attention to the past are bound to repeat it, the same mistakes. And I don't want to have happen what happened to the Articles of Confederation, where they throw out the Constitution that we have. There are five different groups of people that have constitutions all ready to go. All they need is a mechanism to make it happen. So there is that threat out there. Some think it's not real, but when somebody else has their constitutions already in place, that threat is real. The opportunity to change and to make a difference, that's why we have come to this body, is to make a difference. If each and every one that is pushing for a constitutional convention, if they were as committed to having the Congress balance the budget now, if they were to put their focus strictly on the representatives and senators in Congress, I believe that you would probably already obtain that goal, because they would have such heat on them because they knew that you were serious. Most people just want Congress to leave them alone. They want politicians or government to leave them alone. They like the opportunities that they have, but they don't spend a lot of time communicating with their congressmen. That is the problem that is happening now. Congress has not had the communication from the people of the United States, not to the extent that they would feel that they need to be forced into taking action. And they can balance a budget without us having to do anything. All they have to do is decide to quit spending more than we take in. If Congress would not and did not increase the national debt, we would have a balanced budget tomorrow. They would have hard decisions to make. One of the fellers that was presenting that they have a constitutional convention in the committee, when I brought this up to him, and he said, well, we couldn't do that. That would be too drastic. If it was too drastic to do, and it would take several years for them to come up with a way to balance the budget, where are you really going to go? How long is it going to take? The fears that this body has in being able to keep our country from being ruined by the debt that we have, it still remains. We need to make sure that there is no canceling out of our Constitution we have, and keep what we have for our children and their posterity, that we may be able to go ahead in the future and be thankful for what our founding fathers did. I will always look back on that past and be thankful for those who gave, in some cases, they gave their lives to give us what we have. I will always defend that. At this time, I will withdraw my amendment, and I am on and against H.J. 3. Thank you.
Third reading amendment number 1 to House Joint Resolution 3 has been withdrawn. House Joint Resolution 3 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Allen. Baker. Baldwin. Barlow. Berger.
Aye.
Blackburn.
Aye.
Blake.
No.
Burkhart.
Aye.
Byrd.
No.
Campbell.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Clem.
Aye.
Connolly.
No.
Dayton.
No.
Edmonds. Edmonds.
No.
Edwards.
No.
Eklund.
Aye.
Escobel.
No.
Freeman.
No.
Gay. Excused. Greer.
Aye.
Halverson. Harshman. Harvey.
Aye.
Hunt.
No.
Yagi.
No.
Jennings.
No.
Kasparik.
Aye.
Kinner.
Aye.
Kirkbride.
Aye.
Croker.
No.
Crone.
No.
Larson Lloyd.
Aye.
Larson Dan.
Aye.
Lindholm.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Laux.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
Miller.
No.
Moniz.
Aye.
Nicholas.
No.
Northrup. Paxton.
No.
Pelkey.
No.
Petroff.
No.
Piperinen.
No.
Pinnell.
Aye.
Reeder.
No.
Schwartz.
No.
Summers.
No.
Steinmetz.
No.
Stubson.
Aye.
Throne.
No.
Walters.
Aye.
Wilson.
No.
Winters.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 28 aye, 31 no, 1 excused.
House Joint Resolution 3, having failed to receive the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Joint Resolution 3 has failed to pass the House. Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Privilege of the floor.
Yes, please.
Members, after that excellent debate, everybody's going to need to stand up and stretch. And you guys call that the fishbowl. If you ever at St. Anthony's in Casper, I call it the large version of the St. Anthony's cry room. It looks kind of the same. But anyway, it's not very often we get folks here from Casper. And you know the county with one on your license plates and number one in your heart. So we have leadership Wyoming, the Casper group, here today, and we'd like to welcome them to the temporary, not-so-temporary capital. Thank you.
The next order of business will be an explanation of House Bill 1 and Senate File 1 amendments pursuant to Joint Rule 14-1E. Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, if you get in the tray there, you have a handout. It has a legal size summary sheet. It has a somewhat thick packet of stapled Senate file amendments. And then they might all be together. I haven't actually. And then you'll have a one pager. It'll have all these Senate file amendments. And this is what we'll actually vote on, the Standing Committee report at the end. And of course, these amendments are the official. But we're going to work off the summary sheet. Okay, so I want to make sure everybody gets those. They were distributed just before we came back at 2 o'clock today. Okay? Okay, if you'd working off your summary sheet, there's really three parts to it. The first part, if you look and bold, it's got bolded lettering. It says identicals. Okay, see that? So these are identical positions. So let's talk about the identical positions first. So you can see Senate Third Reading Amendment number 2 is identical and mirrors the House Amendment Second Reading Amendment number 3. And that deals with the Lifesaver program. $73,000 was defunded from that program with identical amendments. The next identical, you will see Senate Third Reading Amendment number 3. And now this was divided. That's why you see 0.01 was identical to House Second Reading Amendment number 5. And you might recall that our chairman of revenue had an amendment, I think, on second reading to remove all the funds out of the Department of Health property tax rebate transfer program, which was about $4.4 million, and we put 2.1 or about half that amount in the Department of Revenue tax refund program. What the Senate did on this amendment, and that was successful in the House, so that's our position, to cut 4 and add 2 back to the other. What they did is divided the amendment. So you had the cut 4 part sticking out there on its own, and you had the add 2 part to the revenue on its own, and they adopted the cut 4, and they defeated the add 2. Okay, so consequently, the cut 4 part is an identical amendment. Okay, now the other part is still sticking out there, the add 2 from us, so that's a difference that we'll negotiate on. Okay? The next is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 21. That was identical to House Second Reading Amendment number 20. And that is a footnote specifying no funds from this appropriation shall be spent for the purposes of the Youth Risk Behavior
survey. Okay, and then Senate File 36, excuse me, the box around Senate Third Reading Amendment Number 36 is identical to the House Third Reading Amendment Number 29, and you can see it affects two agencies, the Business Council and the Department of Agriculture, and it takes $200,000 from the Business Council and puts that $200,000 with the Department of Agriculture, and it was for the Ag in the Classroom program. So those are identical positions. Okay, the next segment, it's got kind of a shaded line separated, and then it says related. You can see that. So these are related issues where we're close, but we might have a little bit different language. Okay, so we'll have to work on these. Now, it's got a box around 1, 2, 3, 4 Senate amendments. And, Mr. Speaker, can I say the senators' names? Just to identify them? Or probably not. Okay, the first one is scratched out, Senate 2001, then Senate 3001, and then Senate 3007 are all deleted. Well, the first one passed was $2.6 million taken out of the governor Department of Health's, I think, administrative unit, and it was set up for a bankruptcy contingency. Then subsequent amendments took that $2.6 million and divided it up and took it out and put it in different places. They eliminated the bankruptcy contingency fund, which we did as well on third reading, but it put $1 million in the Division of Aging. And it also put $700,000 in behavioral health for Medicaid waiver rebates. And let me see. And then $1.4 million was actually, that was increased into $1.4 million, I believe, is how that worked. And then so that to the Medicaid waiver rate rebasing program. Okay, and then, so we're about a net difference because we added some to the rebasing of those programs too. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but it seems like with their actions, we're about $400,000 apart. Okay, is the net on that. The next similar amendment is the Senate 2005, and you can see our staff has grouped these with boxes around kind of the ones that go together, but this one stands alone, and it's the transportation Wyolink, and it changes the funding to the S4 funding. So instead of local governments paying for these services, this airtime on Wyolink, it's, I believe the second year will come out of that mineral royalty grant, that S4 amount. And we adopted a similar amendment to that. Okay, the next one is Senate 2018, second reading amendment number 18, and that is similar to, and these actually go together, as well as Senate 3044 with the eventual House third reading amendment 55, and it's about the study of rate rebasing and requires a report. And there's a little more language about the time completion piece of that. And we make it, I think, effective immediately is what the House did. So those are similar positions, just a little bit different language on the study. The next box there on Senate 2035 and Senate 3045 are all the technical corrections. And again, those are very similar positions. We might have had a word or two different. They were all technical corrections where there was a mistake made in the documents. Okay. Mr. Speaker, then we move over members to page 2. This is probably the shortest summary that I recall. It's really just these two pages. And you members who've done this before, you'll remember sometimes this was 4, 5, 6 pages.
Okay, so on top of page 2, members, is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 9. And that is, and second, or Senate Third Reading Amendment number 14 is very similar to House 3046. The Senate put in $1 million of fire, county fire suppression money per year for a total of $2 million. And you'll remember our House position was $500,000 per year for a total of $1 million. But the Senate also put some parameters on that. And they added language that none of it could be transferred. The governor would have to approve it, and it would have to be after the fire season to make sure that there was adequate funds if there was any firefighting needed. So, and that's a September 1st date there. Okay, the next group is similar. It's the Senate 3047 amendment and the Senate second reading amendment number 17. The first one there, Senate 3047, and then go straight across to House Third Reading Amendment number 60. That was the budget balance transfer amendments. Those were different on purpose. You'll remember, I think, that we had about $35 million in our transfer, and I think the body down the hall has $40 million. And so when we're all done, that number will be precise down to the dollar. But they're intentionally placed differently. The next one right under that is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 17 and is very similar to House Second Reading Amendment number 25. I think we might have spelled out it was the Eastern and Shoshone tribes, and I think the Senate said just tribes and or vice versa. And we've got to get that language precise. It'll have to be identical for any of it's adopted. Okay, next you can see that we move into the non-identicals. That's divided by the big shaded line, divides this next section, and it's got the bold print, says non-identicals. Okay, this is one that they adopted that we did not, and it's the final adoption is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 35, and it took them second and third reading to get this precise, but it did not take money away from environmental quality. But it would not allow them to spend money on implementation of the Clean Power Plan until as long as the court stay is in effect. So it didn't take the money away, and it didn't prohibit it for the budget cycle. It just said as long as that stay is intact, we're going to stop work on it. We do not have that position. None of these positions we have. Okay, the next is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 33, and you can follow that across in behavioral health. This is the preschool developmental DDE preschools, and this is the ECA, $954,000. Again, we did not have that amendment. And then next is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 5. And this adds back some money into the wind loan and grant program, $700,000. Next is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 15. This modifies language on the airplane at the university, their research aircraft that they want to purchase. And in fact, I think it raised the interest rate. And I can't tell you the precise number now. You could look in your on your amendments and find that, but that's what that does. The next two are related, or they go together, I should say. Senate Second Reading Amendment number 13 and Senate Third Reading Amendment number 20, and this deals with the coordinator position at the state board. Now, if you go clear across to the description over there, the first amendment on second reading added a footnote that stating that state board coordinators should be funded for 1 year from existing funds and requires a report. And the third reading amendment came in and corrected the funding source. I think it was school foundation funds and not general funds. And so that was another amendment that was divided. They had the position and they had the money, and the Senate divided it and kept the position and told the Department of Education, you have to fund it out of your existing funds, but they cut the money from it and then made it a one-year position at this point. We did not adopt any of that. Okay, and then next is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 22. This was a vacant position that we reduced, the JAC, and the Senate has since added this position back. Education Program Consultant. Next is Senate Second Reading Amendment number 34. This is the judicial flex. We did not have this amendment in the House, of course, and this is dealing with the penny plan. They were a little bit less than the penny plan, but the $400,000 in reductions that they give them, some the judicial branch flex on how, where to pay for that or come up with that $400,000. Senate Second Reading Amendment number 15. Really, this just removes old language that's been in the budget for the last couple bienniums, and it removes the five-year master plan language with the state parks. Again, it's obsolete. Next is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 27, and if you go across, it's the revenue reduction provision. This is that section that has $150 million that if the CREG meets outside the any other month other than October and January, so if they met over the summer and said, we are down $300 million, anything over $150 gives the governor provision to go in and grab $150 million out of the LSRA. He could sweep that in to meet that shortfall. The Senate has removed that, and then but they did leave the section in there so that each, you know, 6 years from now, the legislature will still be talking about that provision. People won't forget about it and it'll be lost. But they've taken that provision out and just left it reserved, that section, in the budget. Okay, next is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 28. You might recall that in the flex language we gave the governor, the super flex, because as you know, in the budget, every reduction is identified agency by agency, and there's been some criticism that says, oh, you'll leave town and you won't even know what you cut. That's not true. Every line, every agency, every dollar, you know where it's been reduced. And but we did give the governor then super flexed if he wanted to take more from one agency to offset reductions in another agency. And we had language in there that said, show us what you want to do with that super flex plan and how you're going to do it, if you are going to do it. And we had that date like May 1st in the House, in the JAC, and the Senate moved that date back just to give the executive branch a little more time to come up with that plan if they so intend to. Okay, next is a new section, Senate Third Reading Amendment number 31, and it deals with directs the DEQ to work with water development to develop a program to remediate the Ferris-Haggerty mine effluent and requires reporting. Okay, the next box then is the next the last group. They're kind of related, and it deals with the governor's budget requests moving forward. The first two were deleted, and then what the final one is Senate Third Reading Amendment number 41 that directs the executive branch to plan for a 5% budget reduction over the 17-18 supplemental and the 19-20 budget requests to the legislature and specifies parameters. So we've done that in the past. We've actually done it twice in my memory, actually three times. The governor vetoed it one time. But what that looks like then, governor would bring back his budget requests, and then he would bring back that, I think it specifies, well, 5%. And then he'd say, this is what this request in this agency looked like with a 5% reduction. And so you get that choice that you can kind of look at. And we've done that before in the past. We had that similar amendment in the House that didn't pass. So, Mr. Speaker, stand for any questions that members of appropriations can. If you have anything to add, feel free to add. And we'd stand for any questions. And then I think we just vote on this joint conference committee report. Is that, what's the plan there? He's shaking his head no.
So. No. Are there any questions? Representative Baker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just have a question on Senate 3031 with the AML abandoned mine lands amendment there. And I was just wondering what the reasoning was for having that in this bill as opposed to one of the other bills that we have.
Chairman Horstman.
You know, I think that's a good question. I think I can't speak for what happened down there and how they did that. I mean, somehow got 16 votes. But I don't think it's inappropriate to have it, and it requires a study and a group to work to do that work. So it's a new Section 300. So really, I don't have any comment. You could probably do it in either bill. We certainly didn't do it. But
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm just wondering if the chairman would be able to kind of outline to us what the next step in this process is. And I think that'd be important, for especially for the new people that's never been through a budget session before.
Well, Chairman Madden, maybe I can respond to that. We're gonna entertain questions. We're going to entertain objections if there are any. And then this conference committee report is going to be adopted, and I'm going to appoint the members of the joint conference committee. And I'm going to send them on their way to get to work. So now is the time, ladies and gentlemen. I'd encourage you, if you have any objections, if you have any questions, if you have any reasons why this conference committee report should not be adopted, now is the time. That brought him out. Representative Barlow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So on page 2, the bottom of the page, I'll wait till the chairman's ready. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Page 2, the bottom of the page, has to do with the budget reduction planning and that footnote. And I'm curious how that actually occurs with a supplemental budget, because only certain parts of that budget are actually put forth based on what the executive of the state may be requesting as far as exception requests or supplemental requests. So I guess I'm a little fuzzy on how meaningful that is if an actual agency isn't making a supplemental request. Thank you.
Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't go back and read the language of that specifically, and I think you raised a good point. The supplemental budget, we only open the pieces that are actually affected. And so, you know, if only four agencies are affected, we'll have a small supplemental budget. Not sure, I haven't read that, if this language requires the chief executive to go into every agency, open them up, and come back with a supplemental request which shows that 5% reduction. And I haven't read this, but I'm assuming that's what it is. And, you know, we did that a couple of years ago when we had budget reductions. We had the smallest supplemental budget in history, but we had the thickest because we went into every agency. And so we had all the budget books piled up, but it was actually to get to a smaller number. So,
Chairman Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On page 1, about two-thirds of the way down, Senate Second Reading Amendment 18 and House Second Reading Amendment number 41, those are identical. Why is the House one scratched out.
Because it's a mistake.
Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My apologies again if the good Chairman of Health could tell me again. You're on page two. I was
Chairman Harvey.
Page one.
Page one.
Mr. Speaker, I can answer that for my chairman.
Representative Greer.
It's a mistake. It's an error. On the report, that line should be slid over. Let me begin there. That line should be slid over under the Senate sponsor, because the Senate came back and reamended that, which tweaked that language and does create a difference. But that strike through on your amendment is an error on the report.
I think, though, Mr. Speaker, though, that strike through on House Second Reading Amendment number 46, that was the second reading amendment that brought the $2.6 million in, and we deleted that. And that's why I think it on. Okay, I'm in the wrong. So you think that's an error, Representative Greer? You think that's identical?
Representative Greer, you think that's an error?
That's what my notes reflect when it was presented to us by LSO this morning. So maybe I see behind you there.
Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There's a note on the second page that was a mistake. This note is correct. And Chairman of Labor Health, you look just underneath that where H3055, that's the one that deletes the second reading amendment 2041. So that's why there's a scratch out through there. We deleted that and further amended. So.
Madam Majority Floor Leader, doing jumping jacks again?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It wasn't necessary this time. I just wanted to go back to the good representative's question from Campbell County. When we did and asked the chairman of JAC to refresh my memory, when we did the budget reductions after the Great Recession or as part of that process, I can't remember if we had something in the budget bill like this or not, but we also basically assigned every standing committee with substantive overview of agencies to review the budgets and make recommendations. And I don't see that legislative involvement in this process, and maybe the chairman remembers.
Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I have that amendment now. I'm looking at it, and it is certainly not in there, that same language from, I don't know, 6 years ago or 4 years ago where we involved every standing committee to go through and identify reductions. So that is certainly not in here.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A fairly simple question, probably, but because it's been 2 years since the last time, there were certainly other amendments that we passed that aren't in here, like the weeds and then the Colorado River and all that sort of thing. What happens to those?
Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. These are just the Senate positions, and then when they are identical or close to ours, we show them, but we didn't show all the non-relateds from us. You're right. We have a whole bevy of positions that, budget positions that stances, I should say, or issues, amendments that we adopted that we'll have to negotiate. These show only the Senate's. Now, there will be at a time when we get through this conference committee process, you'll see them all lined up together. There will be a combined summary sheet at some point, but that'll be farther into the process.
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just to kind of remind, refresh the memories of the Appropriations Committee and everybody else in here, we had House Amendment Number 5 on the second reading that was identical to the, I guess it's 3, on the third reading is Amendment Number 3, and we split that amendment also here. And we split it, and one of them refers to the refund program, and one was the health department's was rebate program, I call it. And both of these in our body passed almost unanimous, as I recall, and there was a lot of positive reaction on that. And I just think that, you know, this hatchet approach that is used in the other side is a little over the top, and I think that, or I hope that the Appropriations Committee will consider that as part of the outcomes that will ultimately happen there.
Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And yeah, so the process generally is, so we have that identical reduction, but then we're about $2 million apart. And so we'll, whether we meet in the middle or whether we adopt the House position and adopt another Senate position, we work a couple of these issues together, it's hard to predict. But we'll certainly, you know, advocate for the House position.
Further questions, comments, objections, or observations? Last chance. Then without objection, the Standing Committee report is adopted and pursuant to Rule 14-1G is referred to the Joint Conference Committee. The Joint Conference Committee is Horstman Chairman, Moniz, Stubson, Greer, and Connolly. Chairman Horstman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now, after that rousing explanation, it's time to stand again. We got at the other half of Leadership Casper, you know, from Natrona County, that number one on our license plates. You go ahead and say it, number one in our heart. There we go. So let's stand up and welcome Leadership Casper. Thank you.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
And Chairman Petro.
Thank you. The two of us serve as the co-chairs of the Women's Legislative Caucus. And back in January, the two of us sent all of you a very nice letter, and we sent the same nice letter to ourselves, which was a little odd. With a copy of this book. Now, I'm not going to put all of you on the spot and ask you how many of you have read it or whether you gave it to a significant other in your life instead of reading it yourself. But our hope was really that all of you would look at this book. But if you haven't looked at the book, don't worry about it because this week is your chance to hear the author. We are so excited to have as our Leap into Leadership speaker, Bridget Schulte, who is the granddaughter or great-granddaughter of Natrona County homesteaders, although she didn't grow up in Natrona County, number one in everyone's hearts, maybe. But she is this is a New York Times bestseller. Thanks to the good efforts of the majority floor leader and others, she's coming to speak to all of us. But we need your RSVPs for dinner, please. And the book signing and cocktail party starts at 6, and dinner is at 7 on Thursday. So if you haven't RSVP'd or forgotten about it, I think you should take advantage of the opportunity to hear her speak and talk about something we can all relate to, overwhelmed. Thank you.
Messages from the Senate.
Message number 174, Mr. Speaker. The bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated, Senate File 70, Off-Road Recreational Vehicles, Ayes 29, Noes 1, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 175, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. Senate File 95, Eye Care Consumer Protection-2, Ayes 29, Noes 1, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 176, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. Senate File 97, Student and School Safety Call Center, Ayes 19, Noes 11, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 177, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. Senate File 99, Emergency Medical Services, Ayes 30, Noes 0, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 178, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. Senate File 100, Special Districts-Emergency Medical Services, Ayes 28, Noes 2, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 179, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. Senate File 101, Public Health Laboratory Fees, Ayes 30, Noes 0, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 180, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. Senate File 102, Federal Funds Distribution, Ayes 28, Noes 2, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 181, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. Senate Joint File number 4, Labeling for Genetically Engineered Items, Dash 2, Ayes 26, Noes 4, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 182, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. Senate File 88, State Lands Within Grand Teton National Park, Ayes 30, Noes 0, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 183, Mr. Speaker, the bill listed below passed the Senate on third reading. Senate File 96, Marijuana Edibles, Ayes 23, Noes 7, Ellen Thompson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 45, Engrossed, Rural Health Care Districts-Authority, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Larson, Schwartz, Wilson, Kasperic voted no. Signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 57, Engrossed, Freestanding Emergency Center, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baldwin, Barlow, Dayton, Edmonds, Harvey, Kasperic, Larson, Schwartz, and Wilson, signed by Representative Harvey, Chairman.
Senate files on first reading. The first file for our consideration is Senate File 50. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 50 from Senator Boner, an act relating to crimes on offenses.
Senate File 50 is assigned to Committee Number 1 Judiciary. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 92.
Senate File 92 from Senator Nicholas, an act relating to administration of government.
Senate File 92 is assigned to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. The next file for our consideration is Senate File 62.
Senate File 62 from Senator Kinski, an act relating to alcoholic beverages.
Senate File 62 is assigned to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Next file for our consideration is Senate File 94. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 94 from Senator Meyer, an act relating to payments for educational services.
Senate File 94 is assigned to Committee Number 4, Education. The next file is Senate File 18.
Senate File 18 from Senator Peterson, an act relating to capital construction.
Senate File 18 is assigned to Committee Number 9, Minerals. Next file for introduction is Senate File 39. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 39 for Minerals, an act relating to prioritization of municipal solid waste facilities. cease and transfer projects.
Senate File 39 is assigned to Committee Number 9, Minerals. The next file for introduction is Senate File 58. The clerk will read the file.
Senate File 58 from Labor, an act relating to hospitalization and treatment of mentally ill persons.
Senate File 58 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. The next file for introduction is Senate File 60. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 60 from Labor, an act relating to public health and safety.
Senate File 60 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. The next file for introduction is Senate File 73. The clerk will read the file.
Senate File 73 from Senator Christensen, an act relating to welfare.
Senate File 73 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. The next file for introduction is Senate File 82. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 82 from Senator Scott, an act relating to public health and safety.
Senate File 82 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. The next file for introduction is Senate File 85.
Senate File 85 from Senator Nicholas, an act relating to medical education.
Senate File 85 is assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor Health. We're now at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole to consider the following bills on general file. They would be Senate File 11, 29, 36, 103, 19, 10, and 21.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Representative Clem.
Committee of the Whole will come to order. Am I on? There we go. Committee of the Whole will come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 11. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 11 from Transportation, an act relating to the Military Department, extending the sunset date for the Wyoming National Guard Youth Challenge Program, amending provisions controlling the expenditure of appropriated funds, providing an appropriation and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 11, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harshman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole writes a report, I do so with a recommendation that Senate File 11 do pass, and I'd like to turn the explanation of the bill over to the good Chairman of Transportation.
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, this bill is the Youth Challenge Program extension, and basically what happened was the military department did not come to us in time to have their budget extended into the full next fiscal year. So it is funded in through obviously 16 and 17, but the fiscal year of 18 was not addressed. And we heard this in the committee, and basically what we've done in the committee is extended the sunset. as the bill was originally scheduled to sunset in 2017, and we moved that out to 2025. There would be a little difference in the appropriations in the fact that the big government has changed the appropriations based on the fact that we have gone to four classes a year instead of the traditional two classes. And with that, I would stand for any questions.
Question being called. Any discussion? Question being called. Oh, my apologies. Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, and perhaps I wasn't listening, but could the good bringer of the bill explain the change on page one from 60 cents of federal to 40 cents of federal, and then it's a corresponding change from 40 to 60 in state dollars?
Chairman Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Originally, when it was set up with federal funds, it was set up for two classes a year. And when it was set up for two classes a year, the funding model was as it originally was. Since then, the Youth Challenge Program has gone to four classes a year, which puts them way over budget. And so they have lessened their match, but we're able to educate more kids. And, of course, in doing the four classes a year, they started a class every quarter, and that really helps them maintain their teaching staff and maintain consistency through the program.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report and do so with a recommendation that Senate File 11 do pass, say aye.
Aye.
All those no? Senate File 11 passes the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 29. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 29 from the Management Council, an act relating to administration of government, specifying that state legislatures may not participate in the state employees and officials group insurance plan, imposing limitations on state legislator participation in the Wyoming Deferred Compensation Program, specifying application, providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of Committee Number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom is referred Senate File 29 engrossed, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation that a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Byrd, Kennedy, Kasparik, Larson, Lockhart, Summers, Walters, Edmonds voted no, Gay was excused, signed by Representative Lockhart, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, brings you Senate File 28, and there is an amendment with it. And I'll turn the explanation over to the good representative from the Fremont area.
Chairman Lockhart, not to interrupt you here, but are you on Senate File 28 or 29?
29.
We're in 29.
29.
It's okay. Forgive me. It is 29, and legislators' participation in state benefit plans sponsored by the Management Council, and again, we'll turn it over to the good representative from Fremont.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm wading through a little distraction back here in the corner. Members of the House, this let me just kind of give you a highlight of what the Management Council's request was, or the request went to Management Council. But there was a legislator that says, "Is it possible for me to put my the money that I make as compensation, not any of the reimbursements for travel or anything like that, into the state deferred compensation plan?" And his rationale, or her rationale, was that they are this individual was in a tax bracket that was a little bit higher, and most of, although it's not a lot of money, that he makes by serving as a legislator just basically gets gobbled up in because of his tax position. So they was wondering if they could put that into the deferred compensation plan and then at retirement age be able to pull that out of perhaps a lower tax bracket. And so the AG came back with an opinion that said, yes, that would be possible, but they would not be able to accept a match from the state. And so if they were to put, or if a legislator was to put their compensation into that deferred plan, it would just be that money itself and would not be matched by the state. And then they went back through and specified, as we've known, that legislators are not to participate in the employee or official group plan. And in this bill, on page 2, under official, it makes that a little more clear by saying for members of the legislature. And then we go into the Section 500, which is the deferred compensation plan, and add new language that says, except there shall be no state contribution for any member of the legislature eligible for participation in the program solely in his capacity as a state legislator. Now, the question comes up, what if I'm an employee of the state and serve in the legislature? Does that get mixed up? And the answer to that is no. This non-participation of state funds would only apply to your legislative compensation. The individual, if they were employed by a state or county that was using the deferred compensation plan, would still be able to participate in that program with state funds being matched in there as an employee of the state in their regular job. So in essence, that is the bill. And I would take any questions.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Lockhart's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 29 do pass, make it known by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 29 passes the Committee of the Whole. The next file up for our consideration is Senate File 36. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 36 from Corporations, an act relating to limited liability companies, specifying standards for imposing liability on members and managers, repealing a related provision and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, in Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 36 engrossed, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhardt, Connolly, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Moniz, Vice Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Harshman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sorry for the delay. Multitasking. And not very good. Not very well, I might add. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report to do so with the recommendation that Senate File 36 do pass. And for the explanation of the bill, I'd turn it over to the good Speaker Pro Tem.
Speaker Pro Tem Stepson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before you, Senate File 36, which really is a response to a Supreme Court, Wyoming Supreme Court decision that was issued in November of 2014, and it deals with a concept that's called piercing the veil, which we deal with when we deal with corporate entities, whether it be corporations or LLCs. And there's this concept that if you're using a business entity essentially as a fraud, if you're using it improperly to shield your assets from somebody, that in certain select circumstances, courts will disregard that corporate entity and allow liability to follow through to the owners of that corporate entity. The decision that was issued, there was some concern because it relied upon some things such as the fact that there was a single member limited liability company and that they had not kept corporate minutes and some of those formalities. And those are things that actually our statute specifically allows you to do. I mean, we say in statute you can have a single member LLC. We say in statute you don't have to follow those corporate formalities. So there was a real concern that all of a sudden, you know, Katie bar the door, you can start piercing veils on these corporate entities. And as many of you know, Wyoming serves as the home for many LLCs across the country because we were some of the leaders, the innovators in the LLC world. And so this really created some uncertainty out there for that liability protection. So what the bill does is it really seeks to codify what has been the understood standard of law. And you'll see, if you look on page 2, I'll walk you through the bill and then I'll walk you through the standing committee amendment. You see on page 2, it lists out 4 separate factors that courts can weigh. And none of these factors is determinative. You have to look at each of them and see, for example, inadequate capitalization, meaning you don't have enough money in your company to support its liabilities. You know, that's one factor to consider. But these have historically been the factors to be considered. And we've laid them out here in law. And then under D, you'll see that it says a court should not consider those factors that are intrinsic to a limited liability company. And then they spell out what those factors are. And it talks about, here was one of the other big issues, was using pass-through tax treatment. So you may not file a tax return on behalf of your LLC. You may just get a K-1. That's allowed by the IRS. That's one of the reasons you have the company. So we don't want courts looking at that pass-through status as a basis for just disregarding the corporate entity. And you'll see under 2, again, the flexible operation, the exercise of ownership and influence by a member or manager, and number 4, protection of the members and managers' personal assets. So those are things that are intrinsic to an LLC that we don't want a court considering when they pierce the veil. And now to the standing committee amendment. And this is really more a question of form rather than function or substance. But what we do in paragraph D, it specifically calls out, it says a court shall not consider factors intrinsic to the character of the LLC, including an LLC with a single member or manager. And then it goes on, and it goes, factors intrinsic include blah, blah, blah. So you have 2 includes. And so it's just sort of improper drafting. So we fix that. We take out that reference to the single member or manager, and we put that in the Romanettes under D just to clean that up. So I'd ask for your eye on the standing committee amendment, and then I'd take any questions on the bill.
Any discussion? Question being called. We are voting on standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate file 36. All those in favor make it known by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Standing committee amendment number 1 has been adopted. We're back in the bill.
And if there's no further questions on the bill, I'd call for the question on the bill.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know if this is more of a question about this particular bill, but when we started talking about limited liability companies, it kind of brought a question in my mind about what can the state do about people that live in Wyoming that are setting up LLCs outside the state of Wyoming to avoid paying taxes in Wyoming. Is that outside the scope of this bill?
Mr. Chairman, it is, and I don't think you'll probably find that. We don't tax anybody. People want to form their – nobody wants to form them somewhere else. Everybody wants to form them here because we don't tax anybody. So, that's outside. What we're talking about here is not tax liability. We're just talking, you know, liabilities to creditors and those sorts of things, creditors of the LLC.
Representative. Any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Harshman's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 36 do pass, make it known by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 36 passes the Committee of the Whole. We are now on Senate File 103. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 103 from Senator Ross, an act relating to administration of government, providing for the creation of at-will employment contract positions by the legislature and the governor, requiring legislative approval for continuance of an at-will employment contract position created by the governor as specified, requiring legislative approval prior to the reauthorization of a denied at-will employment position and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman of Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 103, respectfully reports saying back to the House with a recommendation that a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winter, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a recommendation that Senate File Number 103 do pass. And for explanation of the bill, it's the representative from House District 37.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Senate File 103, you can see there are no House sponsors. And so that's why I'm bringing this to you, my cohort and the chairman of the Senate Appropriations. Basically, the story is they couldn't find me in time to get my name on it. But this is an important bill, and he asked me to carry it for him over here, and of course, we've talked about this issue. So if you flip over to page 2, this story goes back really a couple governors ago. Actually, maybe three governors ago, and there was a massive expansion of AWACS because there was no prohibition. And it was, then they got paid for, and we had all these AWACS. And then a couple governors ago, we had a nice boom. I mean, we're in a boom time. And then, should these people be AWACS or should they be full time? And we had all this debate. Well, they should be full time vested employees, and we bring them in. And so that's part of that story. And then, so what this does is basically tells the first part is the budget division, 921012, says that if the governor exercises his authority that we give him to establish an AWAC, that he has to specifically report it to us, and we have to then consider it and approve it. If we don't approve it, that position will be terminated at the end of that budget period. So whenever, so that's really important because a lot of these in, I mean, we see most of them, but there's always this opportunity to get them in and somehow it gets missed and gets rolled into the standard budget. And then the next piece of the statute that's brought in is with A&I Human Resources, and that's on page 3, and it says, no position is created unless the governor creates it. So no agency directors, no one else creating those. They got to be approved by the governor, and then any authorization ongoing, refer back to that previous new paragraph that will be subject to legislative review. And I think it's just important when we're gone that if these AWAC contract positions are established, that we fully vet them and review them when we come back to town. So I'd stand for any questions.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just one question for the good chair of appropriations. And I don't really know the answer to this, but I know when I served on the board that took care of cows, all of those positions that looked at the brands that were on cows were AWAC positions. So does this mean basically that all brand inspectors are cut off and then have to be asked for each time?
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the question. No, this would just be these positions moving forward now from this date and time. Most of the rest of these, we've authorized them one way or the other through the budget and are in the standard budget. And so this would be new AWAC positions moving forward.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Because this is the first time I've seen it, it's possible that it's answered in the text. But on page 3, lines 15 and 16, it says, unless specifically authorized by legislation, and that's under the part for, well, if you could just address where it's where they can be authorized by legislation there, but back on page 2, I'm not seeing that part. Could you just clarify that for me as far as the role of future legislation in AWAC? And the reason I'm thinking of it is because I've just been working over public health nursing bills today.
Chairman Zwanitzer's Dan.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. First, I guess I just want to know if there's been any problem or any abuse or what the problem is we're trying to correct. My second question is, what do we do long term from budget to budget? So a position comes up for 1 year, let's say, I assume the Appropriations Committee or the legislature as a whole says no more AWAC position. Can that position come up 2 or 3 years later? And doesn't it only last as long as a budget cycle lasts anyway? And so I can understand when we do a budget in the next year and a supplemental, but when we get a whole a next budget cycle, would that still apply from a supplemental into a full budget session?
Chairman Harshman.
Okay, to answer the first question from a good representative from District 7, authorized by legislation means when you bring a bill and you have an AWAC in it, and if that's authorized and we've approved it and voted on it and put it into law, then that's not in this group. These are positions that are created by the executive branch when we're out of town, we're gone. And so when we come back to town, we want to make sure that those are brought to our attention specifically. First of all, we require the report, but we want specific review of funding for those. And so there will be no chance that they'd get rolled into the standard budget without review of the legislature. So that's the answer to that question, I hope. And then the question from the representative from District 43, each budget action really just lasts as long as the budget. So you can't bind a future legislature. So, but the key is, so trying to fix the problem. So I think you got to go back in history. We haven't had this problem recently because we've had a lot of money, frankly. And when you go back to the last period of austerity in this state, this is pretty common practice. And I think we want to get ahead of this to make sure that we all of a sudden don't come back and there's 60 new contract employees have been established. And then it's on us and we're going, well, you know, this one got rolled through because we had enough money and we reorganized. And I just want to make sure that we see them all and have an up or down vote on them.
Representative Connolly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a question for the good chairman of appropriations. Section H talks very specifically about the governor, but I'm curious about the Department of Health and the Department of Corrections flex authority that we've given them between sections 100 and 900.
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I read that, it would apply to that. I mean, they could use their flex authority to establish one, but we would have to review it and approve it to have it ongoing. And so that's my answer to that. I think it allows them to, we still allow the governor to do that, but we're going to make sure that we review them when we come back.
Representative Escobel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So then when JAC reviews those positions, are we going to have to dig deeper into those budgets to find out where those AWACs were removed, and then we get lobbied by a group of individuals to put that position back in? Are we going to have to run budget amendments just to bring back a contract employee?
Chairman Harshman.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, and to give you an example this year where we reviewed a couple that we knew about. One was
in the governor's office, and one was in the Secretary of State's office. And we denied both of those and pulled those back. I think there's another example where maybe in with the State Board, Department of Education, is an AWAC. And so absolutely you'd have talk about those. So hopefully that would be the case, that they're not just rolled into the standard budget and we somehow don't ever really see them or get to talk about them. So, you know, I can't predict what you'd have to do to bring back an AWAC. I guess if you wanted to, you're duly elected. That'd be your choice. So,
Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, just to follow up, Mr. Chairman, would it be possible for us to see a list? Because now it kind of sounds like we're talking about more than just a couple of positions. So would we be able to have like a list of the AWACs that weren't reauthorized?
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure you would. I mean, this is a new process we're trying to institute that. So let's say now in this budget and we leave and there's 20 AWACs established. Well, we're going to look at all 20 of those in when we do the next budget, the next JAC, and the next legislature. That's the idea behind this, that they wouldn't just roll into the standard and all of a sudden we have 20 new positions that we never really got to talk about. And so it's that kind of that creep of the budget that we really, as the appropriations branch of government, really have no say in. And so we want to, I think, urge a little caution, and we bring this really from past experience. I mean, it happened in the 90s, frankly.
Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. And finally, to find those AWAC positions in the budget, it's a little bit more difficult, but I know you're doing them budget by budget. And just to make it a little bit more transparent, you know, I'd like to see all of that in one list. Thank you.
Chairman Zwanitzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One more question as I read through and think about how this is going to work. So here in 2 months, someone gets an AWEC contract. They have a 2-year contract. The governor approves it. Everything goes well. It's in one of our agencies. It's a good public purpose. The governor likes it. It goes back to this body next February or January, and we say, nope, we don't like it. Even though that person's on a 2-year contract, we just terminate their job right then. And I just want to know how it's going to work in practice. It sounds really good, but if you're that contract employee who has an idea you're going to have a 2-year contract and you're on a mission for 2 years to do whatever goal we contract you out for, are we just going to cut it out as of March 1st next year if the legislature doesn't like it? And does that cause turmoil for agencies to ever contract anybody here for a needed purpose?
Chairman Harshman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't think that's the intent nor the way this reads in paragraph H, and really talking about duties of the budget division and transmittal of the standard budget, and that's what we're talking about. So if somebody gets an AWAC contract when we leave, the example, and has a 2-year contract, that'll last 2 years. But when the next standard budget rolls around 2 years from now, that will be it'll be spotlighted that we will have to approve or disapprove and won't be just rolled into their budget through a Chapter 17 reorganization where they match expenditures to appropriations to expenditures. So, yeah, it's not a year-to-year cutoff where we're going to be here each year looking at those. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 103 do pass, make it known by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 103 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next file up for our consideration is Senate File 19. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 19 from Revenue, an act relating to public funds, authorizing investment of public funds as specified, authorizing a funds pool managed by the State Treasurer as specified, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, to Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom is referred Senate File 19, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Dayton, Edwards, Jennings, Kinner, Laux, Madden, Reeder, and Wilson, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, to do so with recommendation that Senate File 19 do pass, and I will explain the bill.
Chairman Madden.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is a bill, it's a committee bill that I decided to run through the Senate first because it doesn't involve any appropriation of money or increase in taxes. Well, what this is a project we looked at for about a year and a half, and it's been done on behalf of local governments through their associations, respective associations for municipalities and for counties. And what the deal is that this bill will allow the process to continue for the state treasurer to be able to invest, let's say, kind of semi-long-term money that local governments have for you know, on behalf of them, and he'll manage it kind of like he manages other accounts. And the particular account that you can compare it to would be the our pooled account of all of the, I guess it's kind of our giant checking account that goes up and down, so there's a certain amount of liquidity. And the difference and the reason that the local governments were so interested in it is because the returns are demonstrably better under the state investment regimen. And the kind of testimony we heard in committee was that the kind of the returns you're getting right now is you know, around 0.5% or something like that. And our fixed income investments in the treasurer's office isn't too hot either right now, but it's still a lot better. I guess in typical time periods, we can say that there's probably somewhere between 200 and 300 basis points difference in what the county or what the treasurer does and what the local governments can do. So that's really all it is. I guess I can point out to you what the protocol is going to be. The plan is that if this passes, the SLIB board will work on a master investment policy for this. They also have to set up rules. The kind of rules they're going to set up is to prevent all local governments from letting it morph into their checking account. There's going to be a requirement that when you put money in, you can't take it out except with a six-month notice or whatever it happens to be. So we got a lot of testimony in favor for it. It's a pretty simple bill, and I probably talked too long about it already. So I would entertain questions. Or
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just have one question. Who determines the length of time? Is that just based upon what the county wants to do and then the treasurer provides that, or is that actually will be determined in rule and reg what options are available for this pooled investment?
Chairman Men.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think the latter is correct. The rules and regulations will outline, you know, what the parameters are. We do know that in our committee we've talked about this during the interim and so forth, and it's clear to both the local governments and it's clear to the treasurer's office that the idea isn't to, you know, send all your money in and then ask every month to draw money out to pay bills. The kind of things that happens is that, well, we had one municipality, for example, that they had a well-heeled individual that put in their will some kind of a maintenance account for an arts center, or I don't know what it was. It was some kind of a building, and anyway, it was intended for the maintenance and the upkeep of the facility, and at the rate they're getting, it doesn't, you know, they're just not getting any return. So, and they have no intention of spending that money. They just want to have an investment that is actively managed instead of the passive management that, you know, alternatives are.
Representative Greer.
Thank you. For Chairman of Revenue, quick question, I could have looked this up, but I'm being lazy. Joint powers boards are deemed to be a public corporation. Are they covered by this? And are we clear that they're covered by this?
Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe they are, but I will have an answer for sure tomorrow, assuming this goes to second reading.
Representative Greer.
Yeah, and just one follow-up on that is, you know, with joint powers boards where the members are, the county, the city, the school district, or there's various different arrangements. But in my county, we have a joint powers board for an aquatic center where we saved our tax dollars or had the initial investment and put $5 million into a fund to generate money for the operations, and the assumptions were based on a little higher rate of return than what they were able to get. So this bill fixes exactly that. So I just want to make sure we bring in that group.
Chairman Madden.
Yeah, like I say, I'll have an answer by tomorrow, and if it's appropriate, if it needs to be, I'll bring an amendment in.
Is there any other discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 19 do pass, make it known by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 19 passes the Committee of the Whole. The next file up for our consideration is Senate File 10. The reading clerk will read the bill. The file.
Senate File 10 from Senator Perkins. An act relating to civil procedure exempting firearms and ammunition from execution and attachment as specified and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, in Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred Senate File 10 engrossed, respectfully report saying back to the House with a recommendation and a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Miller?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 10 do pass. And for explanation of the bill, the representative from House District 15.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, what Senate File 10 does is says that if you have a civil execution against your property, you have a judgment, and they execute the judgment and take some of your property for that execution. Three firearms with a total value of up to $3,000 plus 1,000 rounds of ammunition total are exempt from that execution. You can keep them. So if you declare bankruptcy and they take everything, they leave you with three firearms and the ammunition. And that's the bill in a nutshell.
There is a Committee of the Whole amendment.
Okay.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 10. And all this does is go on to clarify that ammunition. You can either have 1,000 rounds or $1,000 worth of ammunition. If you're shooting gun being transferred is a high-value gun. There are guns out there that cost $10 a round, and if you had 1,000 rounds of that, you'd have a significant asset. So just trying to say whichever is less, either 1,000 rounds or $1,000, trying to clarify that. So I would encourage your support. Thank you.
Representative Croker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a concern with this amendment, and it's because it takes out the per firearm. I think if you left the per firearm, it would be a better amendment, because one of the most common rounds of ammunition is available little bricks of 500 and is really inexpensive. And so if you, I think it's appropriate to allow 1,000 rounds of that type of ammunition plus rounds for the others. So I think I would feel a lot more comfortable with this if it allowed a thousand or $1,000 per firearm.
Representative Walters. Oh, excuse me, Chairman Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just got kind of the broad question of what the purpose of House Senate File 10 is. I mean, here we are, all the possible assets, and then we carve out not three, but four or five. Well, we cut out three, but not four or five or six. And to me, I don't see any logic to this. I don't see why. You know, there's probably people who go bankrupt, and this is only assets they have. I don't know. Just ammunition and guns.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you notice on here, this is Romanette 5 in 120-106, and there are other exemptions in there, such as tools for your business. So if you were a plumber, for example, you could keep the tools necessary to do your business. There's some exemptions in there for other personal property, for clothing, things like that. And this just adds another one in there that you can keep. Mr. Chairman, I think we're still on the amendment, though.
We are. Are we ready for the question? We are voting on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 to Senate File 10. All those in favor, make it known by saying aye. Those opposed, no?
No.
The amendment fails. We are back in the bill. Chairman Zwan and Sir Dave.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm following along with the fine chairman of revenue, and I don't think I caught the answer. My question would be, where was the logic in one firearm? And I understand you go and there's other exemptions. You get your Bible and you get $4,000 worth of personal property and $2,000 worth of clothing and $4,000 if you're running a business. So I understand if you get one, and the thought process there is you might need it to go hunting and provide yourself food. So why did we come up with three and not five? So if you could just be a little more specific. I'm not against the bill or for the bill. I just need a little more logic on it.
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A little of the logic on the three was a handgun for self-protection, if you so wish, a shotgun to hunt birds and small game, and a rifle to hunt big game. And that was the logic.
Is there any other discussion? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. We are all those in favor of Chairman Miller's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 10 do pass, make it known by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The Senate File 10 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We are now on Senate File 21. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 21 from Revenue, an act relating to mine product taxes, removing obsolete language, repealing obsolete provisions, conforming provisions, and providing for an effective date. Mr. Chairman, Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom is referred Senate File 21, respectfully reports saying back with the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Dayton, Edwards, Jennings, Kenner, Laux, Madden, Reeder, Wilson, signed by Representative Madden, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. What is your pleasure, Chairman Madden?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 21 do pass, and I will explain the bill. There's really not much to explain in the bill. It doesn't change really the meaning or the context or the content of any part of 3914. But what we're talking about here, folks, is especially in Title 39, we have a lot of, whenever we have a change in a statute, maybe a change in the tax rate or something, or a change in the way we assess property or minerals or whatever it happens to be, we'll say that, you know, everything we've done before this date was done okay, but after, you know, like if you go to line 14 on page 2, you see commencing January 1, 2003. Well, that was important probably when they put it in there in 2002 or 2001, whenever it was. But now it kind of reads stupid. You know, I mean, you know, that 2003 was, what, 13 years ago. And, you know, I'll sound almost like a broken record on it, but it's just something that came from a mineral task force. And actually, it was the first meeting we had. And they said, well, let's get, first of all, before you do anything else, let's make sure that we get all these archaic phrases out of here. And that's all it is. It doesn't change anything except taking that out. So if there's no questions, I'll call for the question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Madden's motion when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 21 do pass, make it known by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 21 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next file for our consideration is Senate File... Oh, excuse me, never mind. Madam Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, make it known by saying aye. Those opposed? Motion carries.
Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. Speaker, Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, beg leave to report as follows. Senate File 11, recommended due pass. Senate File 29, recommended due pass. Senate File 36, amended, recommended due pass. Senate File 103, recommended due pass. Senate File 19, recommended due pass. Senate File 10, recommended due pass. Senate File 21, recommended due pass. Signed by Representative Klim, Chairman.
Representative Klim.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Congratulations, Representative Klim. We have some additional reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom is referred Senate File 40, Engrossed Abandoned Mine Land Funds, respectfully reports them back to the House with a recommendation that a due pass the following amendments. Those who voted aye, Representatives Burkhart, Conley, Greer, Harshman, Moniz, Nicholas, and Stubson, signed by Representative Harshman, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 38, Engrossed, Data Management Policies, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, Danswanitzer, Representative Gay voted no, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 63, Engrossed Economic Development Programs, - Revisions, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation at a due pass. Those who voted aye, Representative Blackburn, Byrd, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, Danswanitzer, 3 no votes, Representative Edwards, Gay, and Jennings, signed by Representative Danswanitzer, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, to whom is referred Senate File 65 engrossed, Patent Trolling, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Blackburn, Byrd, Edwards, Gay, Jennings, Kirkbride, Lindholm, Paxton, and Dan Swanager, signed by Dan Swanager, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 1, Judiciary, to whom is referred, Senate File 2, engrossed, Attorney General Opinions-Legislative Request, respectfully report same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Those who voted aye, Representatives Baker, Escobel, Halverson, Croker, Crone, Miller, Pelkey, Pinnell, and Winters, signed by Representative Miller, Chairman.
Committee announcements.
Right here.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and privilege to the floor.
Please.
I'd like to bring you Minerals Committee Number 9's activities for tomorrow. The first one will be Senate File 28, Carbon Capture, Storage, and Sequestering Permit. Senate File 74, State Miners Hospital Board and Employees. And Senate File 89, Workers' Compensation Time for Required Hearings. And committee, that we'll meet at 8 o'clock, and depending on how we get through these, we will complete these tomorrow sometime.
Chairman Larson Lloyd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee, number 10, Labor, labored, will meet tomorrow 10 minutes after adjournment to consider the following bills: Senate File 43, 58, 61, and 86.
Chairman Petroff.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will be meeting tomorrow morning, Wednesday, February 24th at 9 a.m. in room H38 to consider Senate File 90, Lifetime Game and Fish Licenses, Purple Heart Recipients.
Chairman Harshman.
Wow. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Okay. Your committee number 2 will meet upon adjournment today for re-referred bills, Senate File 31, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, Senate File 32, Engrossed, Alternative School Accountability, Senate File 44, Obsolete Statutory Language. And then, Mr. Speaker, your committee will continue hearings at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning on Senate File 68, Engrossed, Budget Shortfall Measures, Senate File 91, State Penitentiary Facilities Review, and Senate File 41, Engrossed, State-Funded Capital Construction.
Chairman Northrop.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 4, Education, will meet tomorrow upon adjournment. We're going to hear 3 bills, Senate File 24, Senate File 81, and Senate File 14. Thank you.
Representative Blake.
Mr. Speaker. Your committee, Transportation, number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet in 10 minutes, H37, to discuss the following files. Senate File 9, Engrossed, Railroad Quiet Zones. Senate File 4, Military Service Member Protections. Senate File 3, Permissive Preference for Veterans in Private Employment. Senate File 12, Engrossed, Vietnam War Commemoration. Senate File 33, Engrossed, Vehicle Registration, Shell Businesses.
Madam Majority Floor Leader, I think that clears the deck.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, your general file for tomorrow, and we will email that out to you also, but it will be Senate File 40, 15, 37, 30, 45, 42, 57, 38,
63, and 65. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I move that the House adjourn until 10 a.m. February 24th, 2016.
You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We're adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, February 24th.